March 21st to order. We do not quite yet have a quorum, but so we won't take action, but I think we should get started because we will be ending at 4:30. If we aren't finished, we will continue at 6 o'clock in room 107. So, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Senator Dames, and I'm here today on Senate File number 2158. Senate File 2158 is a bill for an act relating to education financing, permitting a one-time fund transfer of the Independent School District number 88 in New Ulm, Minnesota. Fund transfer for New Ulm just says, notwithstanding Minnesota statutes, it lists the statutes. Says Independent School District number 88 New Ulm may permanently transfer up to $848,000 from its building construction fund to its reserve for capital projects account, and are requesting that without corresponding levy adjustment in the debt service fund. And that would be the bill, Madam Chair.
Mr. Nauman, could you give us a little does this have a required levy target? Is there an impact here that you could explain to us? This will be moved on to taxes.
Madam Chair and members, yes, we would be required to track a levy for this.
The department has flagged this with they basically divide the number by the spread over 3 years. We begin tracking it in taxes payable 2014.
So the effect would be a $283,000 levy impact. Madam Chair, while you've recognized me, it might be cleaner to recommend that on line 1.8, after 4 at the end of the sentence, insert operating. So it would this is how we traditionally do these. From its building construction fund to its reserve for operating capital projects account.
So, Mr. Chair, rather reserved, just adopt the D off reserve?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Insert the word operating after 4.
Reserve for operating account.
That conforms with how we have traditionally done fund transfers of this ilk.
So, Senator Stump, would you be willing to move that amendment?
Madam Chair, yes, I had moved that operating be inserted after 4 on line 1.8.
Good. All in favor, signify by saying, oops, we haven't got a quorum yet. Let's hang on. So, this may be, are there any other questions that anybody has of our author? Not, we may just have to have you either hang on or we will go ahead and vote to send it on. Yeah, we're, okay, here comes another one. Get a few more here, we'll.
Three.
Six. We need two more.
Madam Chair, whatever your wishes are. If you would like to continue, I certainly can step back from the table. However you'd like, Dan.
We would, Bill and the author is ready here, but probably would like to have a few more people here.
They're coming. We're coming from, you got ahead of us, Ms.
Yes.
But we're coming down.
Madam Chair,
Senator Torres-Ray, did you finish?
No, but we're going to convene tomorrow, 8 in the morning.
Oh, not at 6 o'clock tonight. Okay. Thank you for sharing that.
Madam Chair,
Senator
could we just take a moment is it that there's excess in the we're transferring from the operating capital fund.
Building construction, from the building construction.
Construction fund. So was there a buildup in that construction fund that isn't used or needed?
Madam Chair.
Senator Stumpf.
Senator Stumpf, I apologize. I don't have my testifier here. I had planned on having it here. It is my understanding that there was a construction project, and when the project was over with, that this was the excess funds, and now they'd like to move to operating capital projects. It's my understanding.
So there was, Madam Chair, there was a building project that...
It's my understanding of these excess funds.
Mr. Nauman, do you have any other...
Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note does provide... on what is going on with the school district. Offer some assumptions about the details of the lawsuit involved in the
district. Somehow it's phasing in and out of your voice. So.
Madam Chair, I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. I was just saying that the fiscal note provides a fair bit of detail of what's going on in this individual district, and would give the members some more information about it.
Any further questions? Senator Dames, we're waiting
Good
for
job.
One more member to have a quorum, and then we can move this amendment and then
Senator
move the bill
Michelle.
On its
Senator Thompson was just... I saw
Senator Daley's walking in.
Daley's coming.
Okay.
Yeah, and Senator Daley? Yeah.
Get him to come through the door. There he is.
Okay.
Wait, we do have a quorum. So Senator Stumpf renews a motion to amend the oral amendment on page Senate file 2158, the 1.8, the end of the line, insert operate. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. It's adopted. Then the 2482, who would like to move that?
Madam Chair, I'd move it.
Okay, Senator Stumpf moves that Senate file 2482 be recommended to pass and I've got the wrong bill here.
Number
2158, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the TAC Committee on Taxes. If no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is recommended for passage and sent to taxes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much. Senator Michelle. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Madam Chair, I'm
wondering. File
2306. Can I bother staff, Madam Chair, to. I want to. What I'm hoping to have in front of me before I present to you guys is a copy of the bill, but there's also an amendment that I know Senate Council has worked on. There. That's nice of you, Jim.
Madam Chair,
it is the A1 amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senate File 2306 probably goes best under the title of mayoral control. but I think that's probably a little too strong of a title and might cause people some immediate heartburn, so let me talk about that for a moment. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment that I hope the committee will consider at the front end here, the A1, which will replace the bill as introduced, and to make it very clear that this is permissive authority that a city may choose to exercise in order to get its city government and mayor more involved in and even running a school district. So this is option.
Your A1 amendment is an author's amendment.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Nino, would you care to move the A1 amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So
Michelle.
Mayoral control, or maybe let's call it mayoral involvement, was pioneered, it actually goes back to 1992 in Boston. And since then, several big cities have adopted some form of this practice, most notably New York City, where they've had mayoral involvement since 2002, Washington, D.C. in 2007, Chicago earlier, 1995, schools in Cleveland, New Haven, Providence, Rhode Island. And I think probably the best public policy argument, Madam Chair and members, is comes from Arne Duncan, the current Secretary of Education. You need to rally entire cities. You need to rally the entire city behind efforts to improve school systems. And mayors can play a critical role. Mayors can play a critical role, members. Now, this kind of mayoral control or involvement can take on several forms, and it can be different depending on what city you're talking about. But again, the language that you just adopted in the A1 permits a mayor to do this. I would also state at the front end here, Madam Chair, that I'm open if members of this committee or other members in the Senate have suggestions on timing and governance in general. But I think this is an exciting option that we need on the books. I'm desperately seeking for a better way to describe it other than as a tool, which I'm sure this committee hears all the time, another tool in the toolbox, not a silver bullet, Senator Daley, but something that could help. And I also want to state at the outset, Madam Chair, that this is not aimed at any particular school system or school district or city in Minnesota. It is not. It certainly would impact, and as drafted, would impact the larger cities directly, could, if they chose to exercise this option. But it's not meant as any kind of finger-pointing by this member or by those who support it. I know there's several people who will testify probably against it, Madam Chair, but I look forward to the discussion and appreciate you bringing this bill up today.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. Are there any questions before we take testimony from those who might wish to address it? Senator Stump?
thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just looking over the amendment. If you could just expand a little bit that the governance of the school would maybe just kind of run through how it would work. Currently, they have elected school boards, and under your scenario, the mayor of it says basically the mayor of a city may govern an independent school district with the administrative offices in the city as provided in this section. Okay. Would the mayor be kind of the person replacing the superintendent, or would it be replacing the board?
I'm sorry, Senator Stump. I do a lot of committee work in this room, and these are the squeakiest chairs around, and so literally these guys squeaked over your question. So Could you repeat that for me? And
Madam Chair,
it's been a good day in the Senate.
And members, what I was trying to get a visual of is currently we have elected school boards, and how would you see the legislation being, is the mayor going to replace the board, or is the mayor going to be acting more like the superintendent in his role?
Senator Stumpf, if I can, let's talk about that a little bit, and I'd also look to Senate Counsel to make sure I'm hitting on all the right points here. But yes, the mayor, if he or she exercised this, would in essence be the CEO of the school, could appoint a superintendent, could appoint members of a school board. I think there's a number of ways they could do it. Again, the goal and intent of this legislation is to be permissive, and looking at the how different cities have done this, some have done it differently with different boards, different appointments. This specifically talks about 10 years, a 10-year control, if you want to use that strong word, Senator Stumpf. But again, the thought is that in order to marry City Hall with the local school district, that, you know, mayors and city councils right now often get phone calls about their schools. It's the backbone of most, if not all, our communities. And so they're already involved in some way. This puts them involved absolutely by statute and legislation. But again, it's only permissive. It's only if they want to do it that way. And I hope this would give cause to a great conversation within a community.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bounoff, I believe you were next.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle, as I look through this, it actually is a little more prescriptive in the text of the amendment than in the top part of it where it's the May section. But then it does say that the mayor shall appoint members to a board of education, and that that they cannot be those who have just been incumbents in the current school board. And it tells the mayor that he must appoint a chief executive officer. So it does spell out pretty clearly how that would all work. But I guess I was... And
Senator Bonoff, just on that, I think that's fair. That's a better way to say it. I think it spells out how to do it in the event
that he doesn't, she or he.
If he
exactly.
or she exercises
right.
that.
And so then, Madam Chair and Senator Michelle, how do you envision the mayor taking control? Would the mayor just decide one day, I want to take advantage of this authority? Who decides whether or not the mayor, that it's the appropriate action for the mayor to take? That's one thing that I'm left wondering, is that, you know, does the governor call the mayor? Does the current school board? Do the parents? What triggers the decision for the mayor to exercise this option? How do you envision that?
Well, and so Senator Bonoff, I'd suggest we look together at Section 1, Subdivision 2. So it would require that the mayor submit a written notice of an intent to govern, and that a public meeting, at least one public meeting, must be held within the boundaries of the affected district, seeking comment, and then requires the mayor to develop a plan with assistance from district and department employees, and then to present that plan at a public meeting. So, again, if you look at that subdivision 2, there's an order and a set of criteria that they'd have to walk through with the community.
Madam Chair and Senator Michelle, yet really still the power is just resides with the mayor, because while he is required to hold these public meetings, If the mayor chooses to do it, the mayor is going to do it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Michelle, on your amendment, clearly this is only for two cities, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Torres Ray, as Minnesota defines right now, home rule charter cities with more than 250,000 residents, I think that might apply to more than two, but I'm not sure. I know the two
I just used my iPad, so I went through the major cities. Thank goodness I had it today. So there are only two cities that actually this will apply to. They are the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul. No other city is close to 250,000. So that's the intent. Just to apply, I just have that question. The intent of this legislation is just to apply to the two major largest city in the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres Ray.
Bless you.
I would hope that we could consider applying it even in smaller population situations, but that is how it's drafted as of the A1.
Okay. So are you?
I would be open to that.
To an amendment. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you. For now, that's all the questions I have. Thanks.
What is the population of Bloomington? Because I'd heard at one point that they had hit whatever it took to qualify for a city of the first class. I don't know if they've slipped out of it or.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Torres Ray's iPad is firing up there. So
I'll get it to you, Madam Chair, in just a second.
I wonder about.
Obviously, the school district does not have coterminous boundaries with the city in that case, but so that would be I think the advantage Minneapolis and St. Paul are either totally or at least or almost all of the school district is the same boundaries as the city.
82,000. That's Bloomington. 82,000.
Right. Senator Self?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious on Senator Michelle, on page 2 of the amendment, 2.7, why we would not want to see someone with a administrator's license or a superintendent's license. I would assume, this is a large school district and somebody up above, you say somebody that has ability but really doesn't, and then that language there says you don't need to have a license. Is there a rationale for that?
Bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, I don't have a strong feeling about that, but I think again this has been drafted with the thought that okay, we're going to vest clear power and authority in a mayor, and a community chooses to do that and run through these options, and then let's give he or she the ability to put someone that they believe in that position that may go a little outside the lines. I think we've seen that in some of these other city examples throughout the country.
Senator Michelle or somebody from Minneapolis could probably answer this, but haven't they in two cases employed superintendents that did not have superintendent credentials? Dave Jennings was one, and I believe Peter Hutchinson and his group was another. And I'm not sure what special dispensation was created for that, if it was a waiver or something within the department or whatever, but those two came with different backgrounds than normal pathway to superintendencies. I think Dave Jennings must have gone on in some way and established some credential because he continued in other locations out in Carver County, as a superintendent.
There's some hope for us.
I know.
Senator Stump, I think we're smarter than that. My credential is a bit aged, but I do have a superintendent's credential, but don't ask me if I intend to pursue it. So is there any other questions or? Then let's start hearing some of the testimony. I'm sure that's going to sprout some more. We've got kind of both on pro and con side. On the pro side, Mr. Bartholomew.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we support Senate File 2306. And as Senator Michelle mentioned, the conversation that it creates about how do we do better. And Senator Michelle, we'd like to say up front that our support for this bill is based on concerns about long-term trends in student performance. And it's not meant as a criticism of any particular individuals or group of people. Say that especially with Mr. Maserati behind me, who I've known for a while and highly respect. To summarize why we are deeply concerned about the student performance in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I'll just highlight, rather than go through a lot of numbers, the four-year high school graduation rates. The statewide rate is 76%, a level that needs to improve. However, in St. Paul, the rate is 63%, and in Minneapolis, about half the students graduate on time, 49%. And for Hispanic and African American students in Minneapolis, it's 36 and 39%, respectively. If you want to look at a five-year graduation rate, overall it's only marginally better. And for Hispanic students, it actually gets worse. And I want to clarify just briefly up front, because you'll probably hear some other graduation rates. And just to quickly distinguish between those, we use the four-year completion rate because that has the expectations that kids will graduate on time. And it includes four schools, all the kids that start in ninth grade and then move in and move out of a school. The alternative rate that you're probably going to hear about is called the AYP graduation rate. And I'll just quickly read a sentence from the Department of Ed, summary of what they each are. AYP rate is a much higher rate than the 4, 5, or 6-year graduation rate, as it only considers part of the available student group, those who were last reported as graduated and those who reported as dropping out. It does not include the full cohort of students. Bill, sorry about that, but I just clarify up front. This bill creates the opportunity for the mayor of Minneapolis or St. Paul to assume the more substantial role in governing their schools. And as Senator Michelle said, it won't instantly change overall performance. But the most important thing is it can create a new set of dynamics that will lead to improvements. Based on available research, some of the benefits of moving to mayoral governance, a more focused line of accountability, greater stability in leadership, improved coordination of school, city, and community resources. In the case of accountability for decisions and results, most people are more likely to know who their mayor is than the individual members on their school board. In addition, Senate File 2306 creates a singular place for people to go if they have issues or ideas regarding their school district. The tenure of mayors, and thereby the terms of their appointees, also tend to be longer than school board majorities and the resulting superintendents. Counting Superintendent Carol Johnson, Minneapolis has had 5 people serve as superintendent since 2002. Stability and leadership allow one set of reforms to take root and actually have an impact, rather than having a new set of priorities every time leadership changes. Not only does mayoral governance enhance the ability to coordinate district, city, and community resources, but mayors also have broader connections throughout their cities with employers, foundations, and nonprofits. These connections can be used to provide greater support for our schools. While there have been many good efforts to build community support for our schools, some of them have been successful, but by and large, they've all fallen short of expectations, in large part because there's no one person in charge. The city, the county, and the school district can all agree to coordinate their services over time. But eventually, the school will go this way, the city will go that way, the county will go that way. With mayoral governance, you've, as I think Senator Michelle said, you've kind of married the two together. While there are no silver bullets for reversing the disappointing and long-term student achievement trends, Senate File 2306 creates one option for changing the status quo to core urban school districts. Districts which enroll over 73,000 students and are central to our state's future success. Thank you, and be open for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. We have several that would like to speak in opposition. Mr. Alberto Montessart?
Madam Chair, if I may, please come on up. Just for some history for the members, we actually did have mayoral control of these districts. St. Paul ended mayoral control in 1946. Minneapolis had mayoral control until 1959. So this is not a brand new idea. It's just something we moved away from. And again, something that I think we should consider once again.
Let me jump ahead, sir. No problem. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alberto Monserrate. I'm the chairperson of the Minneapolis Board of Education. I'm back home today. I used to actually page for this committee in 1990 when Senator Stumpf was the chair of the committee when it was education finance. So nice to be have good memories of the committee. Hopefully I'll have more good memories after today. Also wanted to thank members of the committee for the amendment that was just passed. It's an improvement in the bill. But I am here to testify in opposition of Senate File 2306. An act relating to education making certain special independent school districts subject to mayoral control. I want to first start by saying that those who know me know this. I've also known Jim Bartholomew for a long time and have a lot of respect for him. If I had any concrete evidence, conclusive evidence, that showed that mayoral control will reduce the learning gap and increase academic achievement substantially for all our students, I would support this bill. I have a background that includes 10 years as a financial advisor, 12 years as CEO and co-founder of a Latino broadcast and publishing business. I have served on a number of charter school boards for 15 years, so I've looked at different styles of governance, including 2 years as a former board chair of Hiawatha Leadership Academy, which is one of the state's beat the odds schools. I'm also the first Latino ever elected to the Minneapolis School Board in 2010. I was elected board chair 2 months ago in a district where 17% of the students are now Latino and 23% of the students speak a language other than English at home. Knowing that the mayor of Minneapolis is supportive of our strategy, I would imagine that I might be one of those people that he would look to appoint. So this is not about what I call my night job. I'm very happy with my current day job. But at this point of the history of our district, this change of law could serve only as a distraction. Not a professional educator, but after 22 years in leadership roles in business, I know something about executing business plans. One of the main lessons I've learned in executing plans is to research what works, develop a plan that focuses on executing that plan, and executing on that plan like a laser beam. Minneapolis Public School currently has a plan based on research that has worked in Minnesota and around the country. Superintendent Bernadia Johnson and myself recently had an opinion piece published in the Star Tribune that outlined that plan and how we're executing that plan. As Jim said before, we have had a lot of turmoil in Minneapolis. We've had a lot of changes in the past. And the last thing that we need right now, right in the middle of implementing our plan, is to have another change that would maybe focus us away from the current plan. Minneapolis School Board opposes the bill for three reasons. First, research doesn't support the change in law being mural control being effective in reducing the learning gap. The people in Minneapolis haven't asked for it, and the proposal serves as a distraction for the real work of closing the achievement gap. Academic research shows very little positive correlation between real improved academic achievement while increasing the risk that standards and test scores are manipulated to promote illusionary achievement gains. Quite simply, mural control has not delivered. A Rutgers University study concluded that there's no demonstrable evidence as the reform structure was responsible for any improvements in student achievement that have occurred. A statistical analysis, they said, does not provide convincing evidence to suggest that mayoral involvement had a causal positive effect on achievement other than demographic and other education measures. The report also noted that mayoral control lessened community input. Citizens in Minneapolis haven't asked for it. The Minneapolis voters have spoken as recently as the fall of 2008 on their preferred governance structure. In the fall of 2008, 100,000 Minneapolis voters elected a school board, passed a referendum renewal, and 65% voted in favor of increasing the size of elected school board from 7 to 9, providing all three are elected at large, that three are elected at large and six elected by district. Each subsequent election, they have phased in election of new board members by district at large. I was one of those first elected at the district level. The process reaches completion by the fall of 2012 when they elect the ninth and final new board member. That's the most recent word from Minneapolis voters. Finally, the proposal distracts from real work, from the real work that the district is right now implementing. We are now working on implementing teacher and principal, quality teaching and principal leadership. MPS already is piloting our teacher evaluation system, identifying and using a common and credible tool district-wide for observing teachers, the standards of effective instruction, and providing them for effective feedback. So the law that was recently passed, we have already been working on an evaluation system that we're about to implement. Training staff, primarily principals and assistant principals, to be certified classroom observers. Train more than 250 observers. Our certification process is among the most rigorous nationally. Doing formal classroom observations of all schools, all probationer teachers district-wide, all tenured teachers in 6 turnaround schools, tenured teachers in all schools who volunteer to have a formal observation, and approximately 650 teachers total observed so far this year. More time on task, longer school day and a longer school year with more instructional days. More rigorous coursework for all. MPS has increased kindergarten readiness, closed the gap in reading across all grades by 4 points last year, closed the gap to the state by a point last year on the math MCAs. There's an 8-year trend of increasing AYP graduation rates for all our students and students of color, double the number of 8th graders taking and passing Algebra 1, and increase the number of students taking rigorous high school coursework. So the solution to achieving the closing the achievement gap in Minneapolis schools and the state of Minnesota is more complex than a single change for governance. As I recently heard Eric Mahmoud say, successful leader at Harvest Prep and our new partner at Mastery Charter School, a school the Minneapolis School Board recently voted unanimously to authorize, while many are looking for the silver bullet for 100% solution, the reality is that eliminating the learning gap is more about implementing 101% solutions. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Is it Manzerati?
Manzerati, if it's easier.
Thank you. How would you describe the current relationship with the mayor? What kind of role or involvement does he have with your school?
The mayor meets regularly with the superintendent. He's had a number of conversations with board members. It's a very collaborative relationship. It's a very supportive relationship. He expressed himself publicly to be in favor of many of our efforts. So I considered it to be a very positive, collaborative relationship.
I'm sure, you know, from the city's standpoint, it's important to have a good school system in terms of the interest of growth and retaining both attracting people and business enterprise to the city as well.
Madam Chair, you're correct.
So he's been demonstrating that kind of interest in his involvement with the school board and school district.
Yes, he has shown the involvement. He's been very supportive of our current strategy.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions of Senator Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems like we kind of know what the answer to how to improve quality in our education system, but sometimes we can't get the airplane off the ground. For example, the information that our good chair mentioned here, I think it was a week or two ago, about the effect of career and technical programs and the outcome that if students have those programs available to them, how much better they do. Another one that is totally demonstrated across so many research, so much research, is the early childhood programs, that if they were fully implemented in our communities and in our schools, that we know the impact that it has on not only early childhood but lifelong learning and incarceration. We have this kind of basket of knowledge on and another one that I'm sure you're involved in, and that is the quality of teaching. And last year there was a number of pieces of legislation passed on evaluation, and there's a number of programs. But if we just put our mind to it and had the wherewithal to move forward in some of these areas, I think the results would be very, very definite across reducing the learning gap, minority participation in colleges and education beyond the secondary level. But somehow we just can't seem to quite get to that point where we're all singing off the same page.
Madam Chair.
Rod's ready.
And Senator Stumpf, you are correct. There are a number of things that we need to coordinate on. I think that we need to collaborate with our elected officials. A lot of our students, thousands of our students literally, I believe 3,000 students are homeless right now. We have 23% of our students speak a language other than English at home. We have quite a few students don't have any health insurance. Those are obviously factors that affect. So those are things that we need to work on together, while at the same time at the district level we also work on improving the leadership in our schools and the teaching. You know, we're still, I think 20 years ago, you know, we still said that poverty was a death sentence, basically, for a student. And now we've learned more and more that there are things for low-income students that we can do, teaching in a different way that could help. We have been actually very effective at teaching our middle-class students in Minneapolis public schools. We have some of the best student achievement. But I think that part of what we are working on right now, we're doing it collaboratively with our teachers. What I think one of the things I learned as a business leader is when you implement evaluations and when you implement changes of culture in an organization, if you do it collaboratively with your employees, you will have a lot more chance of success in the end at actual effective implementation.
Thank you. We've got a little bit of time schedule. Before 4:30, we need to hear to Senate File 2535. So if we could proceed to the rest of the testimony. Thank you very much.
Thanks to all of you for the opportunity.
So if we could hear the rest of the testimonies. Is it Jean? Is it O'Connell? O'Connell? From St. Paul Public School Board?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the group about this particular bill. As my colleague,
would you identify yourself for the record and say it right? Because I probably didn't.
Thank you. I am Jean O'Connell. I am the current chair of the St. Paul School Board, and have been elected as the chair in January of this year. Was elected as a school board member in 2009. And so I am very pleased to be here today to talk to you about St. Paul Schools. We feel, as my colleague in Minneapolis does, that there isn't any compelling evidence that says a change to mayoral control actually changes results for children in any major city where it's been implemented. Having said that, if there are reasons why that we have not seen, if there's data that you have to share with us that we need to see, we would love to have it. Our sole goal is to improve academic achievement for students in St. Paul. You all have a packet of information about our school district, where the state of Minnesota in total is about 74% white Caucasian students. In the city of St. Paul, our students are 76% students of color. We have a Latina superintendent. We just extended her contract by 3 years last night at our board meeting. We are excited to have a consistent superintendent signed for a six-year contract because we've now extended her contract that expires in December of this year. And we feel that our collaboration with the city, with the mayor, is excellent. We are doing great things together. And also, like my colleague in Minneapolis, I have a very strong corporate background. I worked at 3M, spent a lot of time managing complex change projects and programs and efforts over time, and went through more than my fair share of reorganizations. And I understand what that does to an organization. It stops it. It causes disruption, and we have just finally, a year ago we approved a long-term strategic plan called Strong Schools, Strong Communities. We're working very hard to bring a better balance of choice magnet schools and strong community schools into our community to improve some of the situations that have developed over the last 20 years that weren't stellar. And we have a superintendent absolutely committed. We have a staff that has implementation plans ready to roll, and they're not ready to roll, they're rolling. And noise in the governance process is exactly that. It's noise, it reduces focus. And as much as it may feel like an oxymoron, when you want substantial change, the thing you absolutely need is consistent leadership. And I think the St. Paul School Board and the current superintendent have a really strong record of moving things forward in an appropriate way. There's a lot of data in this, and I can go through some of it with you. But we are seeing gains where we have not seen gains for the previous 7 to 10 years. We are seeing a turn in our enrollment. We've had the first enrollment gain in 12 years in our district this year. And our students of color are improving in both reading and math in significant ways. It is not, as all of you know who've been engaged in education, it is not an easy thing to do, and you don't see gains the first years you do changes. But we saw data last night from our superintendent from what we call our winter map testing. So we do testing in the fall, the winter, and spring with all of our students, and it's very predictive of our MCA scores. And in this second year of implementation of some very focused aligned learning strategies, we have seen significant gains, greater than 10 points in 27% of our schools in math, greater gains of in 73% of our schools in reading, And many schools with 10 percentage point gains mid-year with the same base of students that we've always had. So we see progress being made, and our real concern is disruption. And I am willing to look at any ideas, any and all ideas for improving the achievement of our students. We know that we have a much higher percentage of students of color, free and reduced lunch, and ELL students than any other district in the state. We are currently at 38% English language learners. We have 4,000 students over the each year over the last 4 years who have joined us as new students after that does not include our kindergartners. So we have a lot of turnover of students. We have a lot of brand new students, and about half of those 4,000 students who join us each year are English language learners. So I will leave it at that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think you brought the point home. Thank you. Senator Hamm?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask, and I don't remember, but over the past 10 years or so, how many superintendents have St. Paul schools had?
So Madam Chair, thank you. We have, in the last 10 years, we've probably had three superintendents. I believe Patricia Harvey was there for four. Maria Karstefan was there for three. Valeria is wrapping up. This is her third year, and we have her under contract for an additional three.
Madam Chair, one of the things points you were making was the need for consistency. And when a new superintendent comes in, isn't that typically a time when there are things that change quite substantially? There are new programs developed or new approaches taken, or that seems to be. And I say that as a person who served on a school board for 8 years. But isn't that kind of the what happens when you bring a new superintendent in? They want to set their own agenda.
Absolutely, Senator Hahn. We that is one of the reasons that as a school board we made a point of renewing our superintendent's contract 9 months early to let the organization know that things were not going to go through another cycle of let's start over, let's have a new plan.
And Madam Chair, and somebody could probably correct me, but at one point I remember that the average term for a superintendent in Minnesota was something less than 3 years. And I know there are superintendents who have been in school districts for much longer than that. I think even in Edina there was a superintendent that served for quite a while. So I'm not trying to suggest that that is always the case, but I guess to the point of trying to encourage stability, wouldn't having a mayoral structure maybe do that?
Mr. O'Connell.
The data would suggest that that is not what happens. When the mayor in Washington, D.C. turned over, the first person out the door was the superintendent. And I think those are, having gone through a variety of reorganizations in a lot of places, I believe that any organizational structure can work. Okay, I am a firm believer of that. And I think if this were to come to pass and the mayor of St. Paul chose to take advantage of these provisions, we would make sure that our kids are taken care of. The question that I have is that of speed. It has taken St. Paul Schools a long time to agree on a plan. We have the teachers' union working with us. We have more teachers on improvement plans this year and last year than probably in the previous 10 combined. We are working together very well. And when you make noise in the system with a significant change in organization, your organization loses focus as much as you try to not let that happen. And our kids can't afford that focus to change right now.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Michelle, I don't know if this is a good idea or a bad idea, but it strikes me that the mayor has a real lot of power. In fact, the mayor shall appoint the Board of Education. The mayor shall appoint the chief executive officer, who doesn't have to be able to be qualified as a superintendent or an administrator. The mayor shall appoint an education advisory council. The word autocracy comes to mind when I look at this thing. So it seems to me there's all kinds of elections that are being eliminated here. And in regards to the superintendent changing, the mayor can fire the superintendent for cause if he wants to. So if the guy's not doing or the woman's not doing what the mayor wants, we could have a new superintendent every 6 months under this particular format. But here's what I'm a little bit confused about. I would have thought that if Senator Harrington wanted to have this bill introduced, that he would have introduced it. Or if Senator Torres-Ray wanted to have this bill introduced, she would have introduced it. But I don't understand why you would introduce a bill for Minneapolis and St. Paul. I mean, maybe you should change this to Edina and Minnetonka. I don't know. But I suppose all the kids are good there, and we don't need to do anything there, right? But so I don't understand why you're carrying this bill. I was confused why you were carrying a Rochester bill yesterday, and the Rochester senator wasn't carrying it. Is there nothing to do in Edina? Because, I mean, like, I hate it when people carry bills for the Iron Range. I know that aren't. So I'm just, why are you the chief author of this bill? I know you care about the state of Minnesota and you want everything to work better, but.
I don't know if that's a rhetorical question or if Senator Michelle wishes to address it. We've got another testifier, and then we probably are going to need to move on to. Thank you very much, Ms.
I did have a quick question for the testifier.
Okay. Senator Bana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Connell?
Yes.
Have you heard from the mayor with regard to this plan?
Ms. O'Connell.
All right.
Excuse me, I want to correct myself, not plan, option.
I have talked with the mayor. He is not interested in taking over the schools. However, he is a very strong proponent of education. And feels that if the option is there for Minneapolis, it ought to be there for St. Paul, because the two cities need to be on a level playing field. I think it's safe for me to say that exactly. Almost.
Thank
that
you.
Way.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
And just on the question of mayors, you know, I don't think there's going to be any mayors testifying today. Unless they're, you know, behind a screen with their voices changed in order to cloak their identity. I would share that my discussions with mayors, both large city and smaller city, is that they're privately supportive, but reluctant to be much more than privately supportive. And I think everyone in this room understands the dynamics and what it would mean. And for a mayor to come out really strongly for something like this. I think we need to do it because it could be the right thing for some school districts, Senator Tomasoni. And I said at the outset, I'd want to have the option for smaller cities too. Yes, it is drafted and defined by population right now to the larger cities. But if we believe this is a good option, if you, the Education Committee, believe it's a good option, I would agree with that.
Thank you. Senator Han?
Madam Chair, I don't know if we're ready, but if so, I'd certainly be willing to offer a motion to move the bill along.
We have one other testifier.
All right.
Gary Amoroso from the administrators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, we'll make this quick because I know you're on a timeline. First off, we want to say that I'm Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I would like to share that we fully endorse the concept of collaboration. We've heard Senator Michelle talk about that, and we believe that is what is needed. We must collaborate all entities of our government, from our counties to our cities to our states. We must engage our community and work together in order to do what's best on behalf of children. So we fully endorse that concept. We'll share a couple of concerns on a little bit broader perspective, not just focusing on Minneapolis and St. Paul, but focusing on the concept that school boards are elected by the public. It's a democracy that we live in, and the process of electing a school board member is a democratic process. We believe that through this process, the community feels more empowered and has a stronger connection to the members of the board that they choose to elect. Those board members that are then elected by the public are then responsible for the selection of a superintendent. That superintendent is accountable to those board members that hired him or her, thus are accountable to the public. And we believe that that ownership, that vested interest, is a strength of the current process. And would hope that as you consider the passage of this bill, that you consider that an unintended consequence of this bill could be community members feeling less vested within their schools. And would stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Torres-Ray, we're gonna move on here very fairly quickly. If you can be quick and ask a question rather than a speech.
Madam Chair, I'm going to give a speech because this is my district. I do not have a question, but I do have a request of the committee, so I would like to ask for your indulgence in that.
Okay, if you can do that briefly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is my district, Senator Harrington's district, and I hope I don't know if he will be speaking, but Senator Michelle, I wanted to put an amendment that brings the number to 45,000 so that Edina is included in 19 other cities, but I will not do that because I don't believe that this is appropriate. And instead, what I am going to do is ask you, members of the committee, not to support this bill. And the reason I am asking you not to support this is because this will set up a precedent for all of us to act in the future on your behalf. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to promote a bill to come to your district to fix a problem that may arise tomorrow. We have 36 students in our district right now. 10 years ago, we had 10,000 more students. There are almost 400,000 people living in the city of Minneapolis. And for us, the local control and the ability to engage our communities in the decisions about our kids is fundamental. It's just fundamental. I remember, Madam Chair, 4 years ago, senators that chair these committees, finance and policy, invited us to a rural tour of cities. And I did not know what sparsity meant. I had no idea what sparsity was until I went to that tour and I realized how rural Minnesota struggles with sparsity and what it was and why I need to talk about sparsity and I need to talk about rural Minnesota. But I will never author legislation to correct issues in rural Minnesota because I do not represent those districts here. So I have to tell you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, there is a strong letter from our mayor that says that he doesn't want this. It is possible, Senator, that you know, they want to make a difference, and they will tell you, you know, whatever it takes, we'll make a difference, whatever it takes. And rather than implementing this legislation, members, I promise you and I commit right now to meet with you to do whatever it takes to help Minneapolis kids. Any piece of legislation for ELL kids with disability, kids that are experiencing challenging situations, I'm willing to work with you. But people need to be empowered to make these decisions at the local level. We need these boards, and we need to elect this board to make these decisions. So, Madam Chair,
I'm gonna
I want to ask the members to please not vote for this legislation that sets a precedent of control from here to local communities. I don't want to do this in the future, but believe me, if this happens today, this will happen tomorrow. I may be authoring legislation for your districts, and you don't want me to do that. Believe me.
Senator Torres Ray, this has happened in the past. It's happened to districts that I've represented, and there are people from Minneapolis that have done it. So if you think that there aren't decisions made here that have impact on districts of different circumstances, that has been going on for some time. I agree.
It shouldn't happen, Madam Chair.
With many of the principles that you said in terms of the local control and not having negative effect on that. And that's the challenge of keeping some balance between all of this. So I just want to set the record straight that this place does, in fact, make decisions that it can add and take away the local control and have a negative effect on districts of other kinds of circumstances as well. I think we need to move on to that next bill. And
Madam Chair, and I would like to request a roll call on this.
Well, there's been no motion at this point, and I'm not sure if we should lay the bill on the table if you want to discuss it further or if you want to just take a vote and see what happens, or I believe it would have to go on to, if it does move on, would have to go on to local government because it involves local government and elections. So that would be another thing I would say. Senator Hand?
Well, Madam Chair, if it's in order, I certainly would move to recommend the bill pass and refer to local government. I think, as was discussed, there's nothing in the bill that requires schools to, or mayors or cities to choose this option. I think it is something that could provoke some useful discussion, and so I'd be inclined to offer a motion to recommend it pass and be referred to local government.
Okay. So Senator Hanna's moved that Senate file 2306 be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Local Government. And a roll call has been requested. And if there's any more that want to talk, then I'm going to table it because we are going to hear the bill that the 2535 and the people have to leave by 4:30. So I just if we can take the vote, you want to do that or should we table it?
Table it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I move we lay the bill on the table.
Okay. It's been moved that we lay the bill on the table. That's where it is. Thank you very much, Senator Michelle. And we will get back to either digest it further or just take the vote. We'll let you know.
Yeah, but one person can't lay it over.
Well, I think the chair can. So I said it is on the table. So... Senator Nelson, if you would take the gavel.
We've done bad policy and we keep doing bad policy. That's the way we do it. I hate this. No, it doesn't. It doesn't change. We want to do things the same way we've done before. I will pass legislation for your district next year because that's the way we've done it before.
Oh my God.
Can the chair just bring the motion?
On that, I can swear.
So, it's optional. When I first saw the bill, I wasn't sure what I thought about it. Still not convinced it's the best way.
So, Senator Olson, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 2535 is a bill I would like to move, but we are going to hear from. It's brought to me by the Board of School Administrators, and it actually doesn't have a necessarily financial implication, but they would like to collect more money from themselves.
Senator Olson,
yes.
Before we listen to your testifiers, I believe you have the A1 amendment, as was added in the House. Would you like to offer that?
I will offer the A1 amendment.
All those in favor of the A1 to get Senate File 2535 in the shape the author prefers, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Amendment adopted.
I should have said I'm not sure that I want what the House has done. I haven't heard from the Board of School Administrators if they're satisfied with it. Are they okay with that amendment?
It is certainly better than what we presently have.
So, right. Senator Olson, the amendment is adopted at this point. All right. Do we have would you like to introduce your first testifier?
Yes, the Director of the Board of School Administrators.
Yes.
If you could introduce yourself for the committee and welcome to the committee, please.
Yes, Senator Stan Mack, Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of School Administrators. I appreciate very much the indulgence in trying to squeeze this in this afternoon. For about 2 months, I've had a commitment to present on code of ethics and the work of the Board of School Administrators to a group of administrative cohort in Lakeville for the University of St. Thomas, and I promised to be there at 6:30. So I appreciate the indulgence and your chair's handling this at this time. We are proposing two housekeeping cleanup items to the statutes related to the Board of School Administrators, one related to and subdivision two, adding and clarifying that the board would have the authority to disapprove of programs. We evaluate and establish the standards and evaluate for the 13 institutions that now prepare Minnesota administrators within the state of Minnesota, and the clarity of knowledge that we do have the authority to disapprove. That's a minor correction, but recommended by our full board in action in January. In addition, in oversight back in 2001 when the Board of School Administrators was created, which is a result of the history of dissolving the State Board of Education and wanting to have a self-governing agency that manages the licenses of superintendents, principals, special ed directors, and community ed directors in Minnesota. The board established, the legislature established the Board of School Administrators to be a self-supporting agency, not having tax impact, negative tax impact on the state of Minnesota, and thus the individuals at that time chose to accept the assessment for all active administrators an annual fee of $75. And in addition, for the board had the authority to assess retired or inactive members a $32.50 annual fee. That fee has been up and collected each and every year. However, at the time that the legislation was created, there was no formal penalty for non-payment. The history has that roughly two-thirds of individuals have voluntarily paid, but there was no repercussions for failure to pay, and a good deal of staff time and work would go into repeated billing, and frankly, it was unfair for the two-thirds to three-fourths of members who do diligently pay annually for the fee, and it was determined by our board that it was best to establish a very a strong, stringent penalty for failure to pay, and that is the automated suspension of license for failure to pay on an annual basis. This annual fee has been judged to be reasonable, well over 4,000 of the 6,000 licensed administrators in Minnesota have been paying the fee, and rather than try to run the agency like a United Fund agency where you hope for the best, an establishment of a standard for payment makes a good deal of sense. I'm joined here today by two of my board members, Jim Rhodes, as serving in the role on the board, as well as Louise Sundin, and Louise and Jim have worked together as co-leaders of our legislative committee and could also respond to any additional questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. Members, just to give you a bit of a timeline, we must recess at 4:29 today, and we will recess at 4:29. We will reconvene, if needed, in room 107 at 6 p.m. tonight. This bill would go to finance next, and then if time would allow, we have one other short bill of Senator Olson's. So with that time frame in mind, might I just ask if the committee has any questions at this point? Okay.
And, Madam Chair, I should add that all of the representative organizations, including the representatives of the superintendents, elementary, secondary, principal association, special ed directors, as well as community ed directors, all support and hold no objection to this action.
Thank you. All right, are there any other comments?
That I would renew my motion.
Senator Olson, there's one piece of information you need to get that's on its way to you. It appears that we need to actually hold this bill for a day because it was introduced today. So, Madam Chair, might we lay your bill on the table?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Motion to lay the bill on the table.
Thank you.
Motion adopted. All right. Senator Olson, tell me about Senate File 2482. Do we have time to hear that quickly, or do we need to come back at 6 p.m.?
Well, let's see if we can get it done.
Yeah. All
right. This is the department's finance bill. And it is has two provisions that are amending provisions that were in our bill last year. And I have an author's amendment. Our staff has worked through this. And I think in the spirit, it does not change the spirit of what they've recommended. But I think it is a better solution than what was proposed. So I would like to move the A3 amendment as an author's amendment to Senate File 2482.
Members, do you all have the A3 amendment? We will move the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author prefers. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment adopted.
Thank you. The two provisions that are proposals to change are the early graduation, and I believe, was that Senator Hand's proposal last year? And it was quite open in terms of the length of time that the young people had to use the early graduation bonus, if you will, for further education. And this does, and also for the military, that this does change the amendment that you put on, change that timeline. It puts a timeline in there because it is very hard to manage and know what that cost is and when or if a student would exercise it. It also changes that those are the two options. A third option, that money, if it wasn't used, would go to the school district. If you have no limit as to when the time could be, you'd never know whether, you know, if you give the money and then they come back and they're ready to use it. It needed to be tightened up with some of those choices. So we've extended, if you look on the amendment, 1.8, 1.9, 1.10, the proposed amount of time from the department, we have extended a little bit longer than that to give, because not everybody's ready to make that choice when they graduate. And so it gives a little bit longer time for that. And I think the other thing that we did was we did not limit it to schools in Minnesota. If somebody, you know, has come through that and has a chance to go to Harvard and wants to use it there, why not? It's leaving that very free in terms of them making the choice of where they use that that money. And the second provision is in the literacy incentive aid. A number of people had expressed some concern because the model that was set up in the law as it passed related to giving it per pupil for the building that the third grade students were in, and we have different organizational structures, some through grade 4, some through grade 6 or 8, and so it did seem to create some unfairness in terms of the distribution of that revenue. And so what we have proposed and what is in the amendment is that it will be based on the actual number of third graders who achieve proficiency and also achieve medium to high growth, which means they've made at least a year of growth or more, and they would be the amount of money would be $550 per pupil that would be applied directly to those students, and it would be by building so that you still know, you know, rather than something that's got a lot of buildings and some schools are doing nothing, it will, and others are making progress, it will be known
which ones are making the achievement and generating the revenue. It doesn't require that money be spent at that building. That's still local decisions. But it's a fair way of distributing the revenue for this literacy incentive aid. So those are the two provisions that the department proposed correcting, and that we have changed somewhat in terms of the details of how that's done. The amendment that you adopted.
We do need to adjourn. I need to ask at this moment, though, if the committee feels ready to vote on this, or if you would like to reconvene at 6 p.m. tonight in 107. So, not getting any real inclination from you. I would like to know if you're ready to vote. Yes, Senator Stephen.
Chair, I think it's important if the department is okay with this. I see that they're sitting right
yes.
here.
Maybe could you
I'm
give us a
okay
Mr. Lindsay, could you come up, or
Mr. Melcher maybe too,
McHenry or Mr. Melcher, and just give us a quick 1 minute thought on this bill so we can determine if we're ready to vote on it or if we need to come back tonight. Mr. McHenry or Mr. Melcher?
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, the Department of Education. Just on first glance, obviously, I think Senator Olson, when we discussed this bill with her, took into the concepts that we brought forward in the original bill. I think she carried those out with some of the changes. Obviously, there's a little bit of differences, but I think the concept is exactly the direction that we thought. The only thing we haven't seen the runs on how this the way this formulates, but it seems like it probably would be similar to that.
And I would pledge to continue that work. Obviously, we've got to reconcile with whatever the other body may have done to this.
Okay, so members, this the motion would be to re-refer this to finance then, where maybe we could get those spreadsheets that we're looking for. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, with the committee, we do have the data runs. We also have a spreadsheet that references the governor's entire proposal. We will also post them on the Council on Research Twitter account this afternoon if the committee approves it.
So,
obviously, if it doesn't, we won't.
Okay. So at this, I sense that we feel comfortable. If there's someone who does not feel comfortable, I want you to let me know right now. To re-refer this to finance where those things can be taken care of, because we do need to adjourn. So is there anyone who feels uncomfortable voting at this moment? Okay. All those in favor of recommending Senate File 2482 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Bill passes. We are adjourned. Look at all the